Thanks for joining for the Construction Technology News of the Week with Nathan Wood and Peyton Kringley. From groundbreaking innovations to industry-shaking updates, this is your Construction Technology News of the Week. Join us with our guest of this week as we dig into the latest news shaping the future of construction.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started The Contech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in Contech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's Contech Crew time.
All right, Nathan, what do you have for us today?
Well, you know, as we're coming in the new year, got to get your usual Trimble sharing here. There are 10 predictions for construction technology in 2025. So I'm just going to give you one guess, Jeff, as to what is the number one technology prediction in 2025. One guess.
One guess, huh? And
It's two letters. We talk about it every week.
We try to get through as much as we can without saying it.
Yeah, so we'll skip over AI. That's obviously one we talk at nauseam. But number two right there on our list as we're going down is technology integration and that long word of interoperability. Say that 10 times fast. But I do think, again, we're getting this world where API isn't a word that just IT and BIM folks can speak. Operations understands they're like, yeah, that's that thing that shares the data that I want with the system or that the app that I want to use. So at least at that basic level, but that's just, you know, opening up the canvas for what we could possibly do, right, Peyton? I mean, I think that's kind of that Pandora's box is like, just because you can integrate it doesn't mean they should. That's really where the teaching them to think comes in, I think, right?
I recently talked to some project team members at Commodore Builders. They told me about their assistant superintendent spending an entire week copying from spec books into spreadsheets while their PM would lose sleep over missing something in his contracts. Does that sound familiar? Well, then they got Document Crunch. With Document Crunch's Crunch AI, they were automatically able to create project playbooks for kickoff. They were chatting with their project documents to quickly get reliable answers to questions. That superintendent isn't spending a week in her spec book, and the PM, he has the confidence of getting it right every time. And best of all, you can now find Document Crunch within Procore, right where so many of you already work. Check out this video at documentcrunch.com/contechcrew and sign up for a demo while you're there. You'll thank me for it.
Yeah, I like how they put interoperability in there because technology integration, and I'm at mercy of this, but you know, you can daisy chain integrations together and all of a sudden you got a nightmare of something that you have poor architecture around and you have to maintain and support. We have stuff today in place like that I'm trying to transition off of to put more of kind of a central planning architecture, kind of an IPaaS kind of program. But I think they're right here. I mean, I think as we've touched on quite a bit prior conversations, you know, there's a need to kind of close the gap of all these additional jobs that just move information back and forth to make sure that the business is humming and interoperability helps with that.
Yeah, and I think, again, that subtleness of integration versus interoperability, if it was good friend Tom Stem would, harp on that a lot. And to your point of Band-Aids versus that like anti-fragile, I think an integration is kind of that Band-Aid like, oh yeah, we're just, you know, plugging something together versus really understanding how it works and building for the long term is that interoperability.
Yes. So yep.
They're almost interchangeable, but I think it is important for us as an industry to create that separation. But on to number three, precise positioning. Man, they got a lot of alliteration in this one. But this is all about really the GPS guidance, which I think, especially if you're in the DOT world, is huge because you've got all this, you know, if BIM is now finally going to be the contractual model deliverable, now you've got, you know, 3D information that you can use to now directly through GPS shoot out onto the field. So like the importance of having that precise positioning, you know, we've pontificated for many years of like what's possible, but I think it is cool that especially in 2025 that we really are in a world where we're taking that to the real world and actually doing field grading and other things where we're relying on that digital positioning to actually do field layout. So a few here, four and five are really all around data in the fields, the data in the mixed fleet, as well as worksite safety. We talked earlier about, you know, PPE being part of our tech stack because so much of the worksite safety is around either devices capturing what we're doing or wearing devices that are capturing information. So it gets into this whole Big Brother conversation. And you know, I guess, you know, maybe that is, we didn't really talk about that yet. So I'm curious, you know, I guess, Jeff, I'll go to you first because I know you're an IT guy, but maybe you've changed over the years. Where are we as an industry with Big Brother these days? Is that still a big concern at like an IT forum type of a environment, or are we starting to get back past that culturally?
There's always a level of skepticism. You're not going to get away from it completely, but I actually think there's, because of people like Peyton and people that are really starting to look at technology as integration. And when I say that, I don't mean technology's integration, but integrated into the way we work, that they're starting to realize it's part of the job, that it's not, you know, there's so many things that today you wouldn't think twice about that have become part of your life that were technological advancements at one point. You know, people didn't want to wear seatbelts, right? Now everybody pretty much wears seatbelts. Like, these things become part of how we go. But what I love about this is the precise positioning is technology's been able to do a few things for us over time, you know, visualize things, pre-plan things, kind of go forward in time. Like, you know, we had Charlie Dunn on, he likes to take teams into the future, and BIM and other things have allowed us to do that and then bring them back to today to work on it. But the one thing we haven't been able to do is actually like show where that is in the world. And that is the one thing on a job site that has made a lot of our advancements so difficult, is because it's a green field. Everyone's different. The ground underneath your feet is different in every area that you're building. So this is really cool because things happen somewhere in the world, right? BIM, without it, it's just BIM. It doesn't have a location. So I think that is really cool. Worksite safety, like, we keep talking about it. Can we integrate that like technology? Can that just be, you know, part of it? That one kind of frustrates me a little bit, that it, you know, we're continuing to talk about it, but
it's not technology. It's the culture of measurement. And Peyton, I'm curious, you know, in your time, if you feel like the needle has moved at all as far as like more openness to being measured and to sharing data, or if it's been closed and actually gotten worse because we're asking more about it. I mean, I don't know. What's your take on the pulse of the culture of data transparency?
Yeah, I'm always kind of torn on this one. Like you had said, you know, PPE or glasses, you know, clear glasses were a technology at one point that are now implemented into the day-to-day that's required from an OSHA standard. Would it be ever the case that something that, you know, reduces deaths exponentially is required by OSHA, you know, mandated? What is our kind of perspective on what safety is as a, you know, as we're managing risk and understanding how a solution could be provided for that? So I would say that I see this being interesting, you know, with the unions and maybe with the different kind of relationships between contractors. And I could see this creating tension because it's, you know, it's the Big Brother aspect. But what really are we doing with that data? And I think is what is important. Are we coercing people to work harder or longer, or making sure what they're doing is, you know, I think we're trying to keep people safe. I think that's the point. We don't really have good ways to create boundaries in an abstract software domain, right? Like, so for just as a practical example, we're a federal contractor, so we do CMMC. And so we have mobile device management. And one of the things is, you know, having to install a mobile device manager on your phone. And that, you wouldn't believe, is like, it's hard to conceptualize that if I download something, that there's a virtual barrier between my work apps and my personal apps, but it's not a physical phone. Some people would prefer having two phones. And I'm like, why would you want two phones? I mean, that doesn't seem, but we don't have a very good way of understanding like the limits and boundaries between privacy from a software standpoint. I think we see this with, you know, social media, and we see that, like, we don't really know what they're doing. In all reality, like, the social medias are selling the heck out of your data anyways. But anyways, so that would be my point there.
Yeah, if only you could see it. Go ahead, Jeff.
I like that too, though. They would like the physical wall because it gives them a sense that exists.
Yeah.
Right. That's the thing that is really difficult. And, you know, to go back to, you know, if you didn't hear the interview with Peyton, go back to Tuesday's interview with Peyton, but you'll hear in there about, you know, empathy and understanding and breaking things. Well, when MDM first started, you know, many of those phones I broke, You know how bad it was for certain people that were the first ones to try this out? It did not work well. Trust me. That is why some of them wanted two phones. So I totally get it. So it's, you know, some of it is the past history.
Yeah. There's this whole thing ties in with number seven, this labor shortage. And it's like, half me is like, okay, are we spending so much of our energy catering towards the people that are speaking up about their complaints on technology and then losing all these other folks because we're spending too much time, you know, catering to the laggards on one end? Or like, you know, is just labor shortage in and of itself enough of a driver, enough of a measurement, enough of a data point that we can actually point to say, here's why these other technology initiatives that you just like, again, everything's related, right? So if all these departments are related, how do we use this very important topic of labor shortage to help these other causes that we've been talking about? Because yeah, it's surprising that we've gone through a whole podcast and haven't talked about the labor shortage yet. But it does tie into all of this, I feel like.
Oh yeah. And I mean, we kind of talked on it a little bit that we are using people incorrectly in many places, and we can help with the gap. We're never going to completely overcome it. We're going to have to change the way we do business. That's pretty glaring that we're going to have to do that. And that goes to, I mean, number eight is interesting, software and hardware subscription services. This was the first year ever that we saw a shrink in that. I think they might be referring to themselves there, but honestly, I think subscription services are going to be a big topic. Because the amount of sprawl that we're seeing, and not just in our industry, but in most industries, just the number of solutions that people have subscribed to and aren't getting aren't maximizing their use out of.
Yeah.
And they're starting to right-size these and go back and look at, as large organizations, like, okay, what are we wasting? What has grown and overlapped and how can we get better? And also, I think what's cool in that process, and it's what we should be doing in construction, and Peyton, I think this is what you do a lot of, is you should be looking at the process and what we're trying to achieve. And did we just give you a bunch of pieces of software that fit those steps? And we didn't look at the steps and say, hey, are they even valid anymore? So I actually think we're going to continue to see a consolidation and a shrinking of subscription services and people asking more out of them. And I think that's where that's gonna roll.
Yeah, I'm very curious, especially on the subscription, because not only, you know, because again, I'm not the IT software world, but I know we went from what was perpetual, like buy it once licenses, to now this subscription based, and everybody was kind of like, oh, we'll just package everything into one price. And again, people do it with your streaming packages and with everything else,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Like we do it as consumers. So it's like, this is just the business world doing that. But I do think there's this next level as we talk about project interoperability of, well, no, really I should be paying based on consumption. Like how many of these things did I transact from my system to your system? And what is the cost of doing that? Like that's a whole nother frontier of software and subscription costs that like we're not even talking about yet, but one that we're gonna have to, because this larger subscription buy everything, now it's too expensive and I'm not using it, that's gonna force these conversations into, okay, well maybe it is better to be on a more consumption transactional based model, because as long as it doesn't cost human capital to measure it, you could do it anyway, right? Like it really comes down to like the burden of how do you measure what you're paying for.
That is a whole show, man.
I was just going to say,
I digress.
Feel free, Peyton, but that is a whole show in and of itself.
That's tough. I'll just be succinct in saying that I don't necessarily feel that in the podcast prior to this, I touched a little bit on what service are we providing the clients? What is an actual, you know, cost of goods sold? I don't feel like we've solved this issue of what are these solutions servicing? And what is the fundamental point of the solution that's provided? I understand if it's an ERP that at back of house and that's a reporting function of the business and that, you know, keeping the accounts. But if it's something that's actually impacting production, is that not the same as a project manager providing value on top of the project? And shouldn't the services be priced appropriately? And, you know, and at the end of the day, it gets squeezed out of the general contractor with its relationship with the client. And then we get stuck paying these recurring revenue subscriptions that aren't feasible at scale. And so they're trying to make it up in volume with all the everything under the hood. And we're really using a slice of it and giving it to the client. And for every dollar we're paying for, we're getting 80 cents back for the solution, but we need to do it to compete and deliver, you know, externally. I think that is definitely going to shake up here. I don't know how, or I couldn't tell you how, but something's got to give.
It's coming.
It's a great example of what is empathy versus responsibility. We can empathize all day long of if you're software, of course, that's how you're going to think. If you're a project owner, that's how you're going to think. If you're a contractor, but at the end of the day, we're going to have to make it work. We're going to have some tough, uncomfortable conversations of, you know, what is a fair business model for software in our industry. So I think I've taken up enough of my time on this one. Unless you found
we're gonna jump into mine. I've got a post here that I'm gonna bring up because I had fun watching it. This is from Angel Say. It's he's the CEO at Resolve. It's a VR for construction. Mm-hmm. Wow, have we ever talked about that before?
No.
Well, actually, I really thought this was cool. So this is they did a really nice job of talking about how they used Resolve for Meta for Work on a Mortenson job. And it's pretty cool throughout the whole thing. If you tune in and watch it, it shows a lot more than just what they're talking about with Resolve. It shows them using BIM. It shows the, you know, modern tools, even the hard hats and PPE you can tell is upgraded. And it, you know, Mortenson, I'll give you a little hit here. You've talked about VR before. Mm-hmm. But again, this is where the technology and the devices have reached a tipping point where I think actually we are capable of using them for more than just Hollywood BIM, more than just looking at things. It's digging in. And to me, the other thing here is it's really great to see Meta allowing them to put their name on it. And I think that shows that the asset owners are here and they are going to require more from us in the future. And when you're looking for a reason to change, no better way than somebody's telling you have to or you're not going to get the job. So it was really cool to see this. I got to see the software and got to see and meet Angel at Groundbreak this year. Really cool to see this video. Nathan, you get a chance to take a look?
I'm watching right now. I saw Duster Robotics made a little cameo in there at some point.
Yeah, see?
I mean, it's candy that I have seen in a much more probably fake reality where this looks, you know, much closer to no, we're actually doing this stuff and it's not just the true Hollywood BIM. The concept is not new, but each iteration is just that much more impressive. So it is very cool to see how that it is. I mean, not how close it is to reality. It is in the real world and being used and adding value. So great job.
Yeah, and that's the difference with Resolve is that they're actually at the point now where they're using it for clash detection. They're using it to facilitate a process. So Peyton, you've seen a few of these out there in the world. What do you think?
I've been to Oracle's Innovation Lab and got to experiment with some of the vendors that they use and work with. It's amazing. I liked the point where in the video it said that one issue that they solved was $25,000 worth of savings. And then they go, oh, by the way, we had 600 issues on this project, you know, just to kind of quantify the cost savings. That right there makes me feel like, oh yeah, like this is, even if that is puffery, that's legit. I mean, I can imagine the total scale and volume across the entire construction industry in a savings standpoint. So yeah, it's coming. It's pretty cool that Mortenson's leading that up. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, that's a great client, customer-facing marketing campaign. But what it also does is it pushes the industry forward. So I appreciate seeing stuff like that because it gives you a little bit of FOMO and makes it easier to sell stuff internally too.
Yeah, a little bit of FOMO helps out. And, you know, we say this all the time, quantifying a mistake you never make. How do you add that? That's why ROI bothers me so much, because I'm glad to see them doing it there. But, you know, in a couple of years, they're going to go, well, we don't make those mistakes anymore. It's like, well, yeah, you know why? Because we have these new things. Fun to see. And I had to do this. We are sitting down. We'll let you behind the wall here. We're sitting down on New Year's Eve, recording this. And I saw the latest issue of Morning Brew. So, and it talks about the whole year. And I just wanted to bring this up. I'm calling it the year in rebrew. So if you guys don't check out Morning Brew, you got to check it out. Morningbrew.com. I get an emailer every day from them. Love reading it. But I mean, a couple of things here to remind you guys of and that have happened. How about the Baltimore Bridge disaster? Anybody remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was... I can't believe all these things happened this year. We had a total eclipse of the sun. And, you know, my IT heart here, if you guys remember the CrowdStrike issue, and they're showing a display in Dubai Metro that has the blue screen of death.
Yeah.
Y'all remember that CrowdStrike issue?
That was crazy. Some of this list is pretty good too. I mean, even the social media one with Zuckerberg and the conflict at the Senate last January. There's a lot of IT or technology.
Okay, no, I got the one that takes the cake. Definitely the Australian breakdancing Olympics with the kangaroo move.
They had to put it in there. That's why I like these guys, because there's a little bit of everything sprinkled in. But the one, Peyton, you hit it. The one I wanted to actually end on is the tech CEOs grilled on child safety online. This is a year now. And in all honesty, I know Zuck got up there and said what he said, and so did a few others, but not a lot has happened. Mm-hmm. And it's a really important issue, especially as we're looking down the gun of AI and its intended impact and what could happen. Peyton, you said it before, you know, social media is selling our data, but they're not just selling it in with the tools that AI brings. They're not just selling it in a basic way anymore, right? There is so much ability now to triangulate who we are, what we are, and what we do, that it is time for people to take responsibility and ownership and have empathy for this next generation that's coming on. We can't let AI do what social media did. And you can go and read The Anxious Generation if you think I'm wrong. Feel free. We have an entire generation of anxious people based on data that shows it was the institution of social media. We were not ready for it. We are not ready for it as humans. And we're not ready for AI. And we need to get ready.
I have a quick question. Like, do you think that, back to this whole workplace safety, do you think that we have a difficulty understanding boundaries from a digital standpoint, like as far as protection of the youth, for an example? Like, you know, we had a big overhaul, you know, I don't know however many years ago, but in the gas stations, you couldn't have tobacco advertised below a certain level, so kids couldn't have, you know, advertising targeting towards them and seeing that. And I feel like we don't have those protections in place across the board from a youth standpoint. So, you know, it is a free country, but we always do protect our kids. And, you know, there's a reason why they can't use tobacco or use alcohol or anything in that nature. So why is it in the case that we can't put some provisions in place digitally?
Well, I would say keep an eye on the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, because like a lot of the fine print things you hear on the radio or the TV or whatever, like you can have more regulation in that world. Once you go online, like there is way less ability to enforce any sort of regulation, let alone have regulation in the first place. And I think that's a lot of the mess that we've gotten ourselves in, is that we've forgotten about some of these safeguards and why we put them in the first place. And, you know, how do we get them back, or what do they look like when we do bring them back? Yeah, that's a great point.
And I mean, we've been doing it with rated R movies and PG-13. I mean, why isn't there some sort of, you know, validation of your age?
Credentialing. Kind of
Well, it's starting to exist, but we actually need our government, and we need really smart people to lean in, be able to have the conversation. Look, we didn't, those tobacco conversations took a really long time, and there was a lot of lawsuits. Why? Because there's a lot of money being made on the other side. And that is the truth. That is the case. But at some point, someone has to step up and start having those conversations, and not just looking at these shiny tools like they can't cause any damage. They can, and they will. Listen, ethics when it comes to AI should be one of the biggest topics that we talk about. And it is the last thing we talk about in most cases. And whenever I bring it up, I get those rolled eyes and I get that look. And it's like, I'm not a naysayer that it's never going to happen, that we're not going to use these tools. But look, if we don't put ethics in there, and there are great leaders out there that are talking about it, but we need to amplify them. Instead, we amplify the ones that, you know, want to whiz bang, solve this or solve that. So that's my challenge in 25, is like, we really have to raise the level of our conversations around these kinds of things, because if we can prove the safety and improve the ethics of what goes into this, then we can turn and use them as business tools even more powerfully. And we'll have even more people wanting to do it, right? So that's my soapbox. Well, guys, thank you for sitting down, talking about the news of the week. I hope you listening in enjoyed it. Yeah, looking forward to seeing you guys in 25 and having a good time.
Oh,
Peyton,
man,
thanks for joining me, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and I enjoyed the conversation.
Nathan, as always, my man, can't wait to see you. We'll be starting to hit the road here soon, and and get out there and have a great 25, man.
Come to a town near you, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for everything in 2024. Looking forward to next year.
And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for the Construction Technology News of the Week with Nathan Wood and Peyton Kringley. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.